This episode is brought to you by 17 Hats, your all-in-one business management platform to save you from time-sucking tasks. Put hours back in your day with easy-to-use features like online scheduling, invoices, contracts, questionnaires, and much more. Learn more at 17hats.com.
You are listening to the Photobomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photobomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Hey, man. We've got some hot news. This is a good news week. It's good news week.
This is a good news week. Hot news. Yeah. Hot news, Gary. The hot news.
I just dropped the news on the ground because it was so hot. It burned my hands. It's hot. It's hot news.
Before we get into the hot news, we need to point out that last week we neglected to mention that Lieutenant Uhura had passed away.
Oh, yeah, man. That's, yep.
I just, you know, we got to get that out there that Nicole Nichols had passed away, which means now it's just Captain Kirk, Sulu, and Chekhov.
Yeah.
Are the only ones left from the original crew.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it, if you let your mind go down the rabbit hole of how depressing it is, you know, on so many levels, like one, these great talents, some of these cool people, some of these icons of music and film and just, you know, American art and politics and all these interesting things. And then you start to think about like how important these particular people were to you and how they're all dying. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, shite.
Yeah.
I am
Well, good. Talk to me in 10 years, dude. I mean, you're what, 40 now?
Yep, 41 okay. in a month or two.
I got like 18 years on you. So talk to me in 18 years when every person and band you ever loved is dying. That's when you really start to just be like, oh my God, they're just dropping like flies.
Yeah, for me, it's like when you know, one of the bands that was really famous when I was a teenager was like Blink 182. They were huge. They were all over the place. And like I saw an interview with them, and I was like, "Oh God!" Like they're in their 50s, and I'm like, "They used to, like it's just there's no stopping the clock, man. Even the Mona Lisa's falling apart. It's just
when you think about for me graduating high school in 1982, you know that period right around that period when music was everywhere. I became a disc jockey, so every day playing music, et cetera, et cetera. And you think about the monster acts at that time. You're talking about Michael Jackson, dead. Prince, dead. David Bowie's Let's Dance album, dead, right? And then you start thinking, who's next? Bruce Springsteen, Madonna, right? Yeah, that's, you know.
Hall & Oates.
Yeah, Lionel Richie, too. His album was huge at that time. Hall & Oates could be, but they were their last, that was their last big album. They're more, you know, but it's, I'm just saying they were like five maybe big, big monster acts, right? There was Prince, Madonna, Michael Jackson, Bruce Springsteen's album. A little Bowie. I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out. And they're dropping, dude. They're all just dropping off so fast.
Let's do something morbid then. Let's go ahead and throw it out there. Of these celebrities, these icons from your youth.
Okay.
Who's going down next? Who's the next big one?
Who are my choices?
Down in flames? Okay. Okay. Let's
Springsteen, Madonna. Right.
Okay. Let's do Hall & Oates. Either Hall or Oates. They could come together. Either,
oh, well, okay. That's the double. Okay.
Okay, so Springsteen, this is so morbid. Springsteen, Madonna, Hall & Oates, and let's pick who's the biggest.
Cyndi Lauper had her big album right around that. Lionel Richie's Don't Slow Down and album and everything was huge because he was neck and neck with Michael Jackson for like a year.
Right.
Michael Jackson would be number one and he'd be like number two. So you got to throw Lionel Richie in there, who doesn't get the credit he deserves now. He absolutely should be lumped in there.
Yeah. Okay, Lionel Richie. Right. And, let's throw an actor in there, an icon from the 80s. Let's throw in Bill Murray. Let's throw Bill Murray in there, too.
Okay, well, you're going to throw Bill in. I think Bill's going to be the top of the list. But if you're just going musicians, I got to go with the boss. I got to go with Springsteen. Because I think Madonna takes better care of herself.
Right. Yeah, well.
And Springsteen's a guy, and guys die earlier anyway.
Let's take Bill Murray out, and I'm going to put in David Lee Roth.
Okay, David Lee. Okay, yeah, not in bad shape though. Not in bad shape. I still think Springsteen is more likely to just have a coronary at some point.
Okay, so here's the Deathpool quintet right here. All right, so we're gonna go Springsteen, Madonna, Lionel Richie. We'll do David Lee Roth. And who was the other one that you said? Oh, he said Hall and Oates. Hall and or Oates. Okay.
Okay, right.
Those are the five. You pick the boss.
Well, you know, it's David Lee Roth or it's the boss.
You got to pick one, buddy.
I know.
You
and David, I mean, David Lee Roth, you get a little credit over to David Lee because you go, well, you know, we lost Eddie, right?
Oh, I forgot. I'm going to go ahead and take out Hall and Oates and I'm going to put in Mick Jagger.
Okay, well, No. Mick Jagger's a generation before. Mick Jagger should be dead already.
Right. Okay, so, but still. You know, that's the low-hanging fruit.
Oh,
so,
that is like, the very low. That Mick Jagger all day, I'm picking Mick Jagger. For all we know, okay. Mick's been dead for a couple of years anyway. He just looks like he's preserved.
I'm going out on a limb. I'm going to say Diamond Dave goes down next.
No, over Mick Jagger?
Yes.
You are crazy. No.
Mick Jagger does yoga. He's like, you know, he's like, you know, he's like, he takes care of himself. Mick he's old, like, but like.
You know, David Lee was like 18 jumping off the risers. Mick was like 40.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's like saying you're going to die before I die.
Hey, look, it's gambling, Boo. Okay. It's
well,
gambling.
It is, in fact, gambling if you think David Lee goes before Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger's like any day. Like any day, I expect it to be across the thing that Mick Jagger has died.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Poor
like
Mick.
Like Mick Jagger, how old is Mick Jagger? Isn't he like 80?
Yeah. You know who else is like older in reality than in your head is Steven Tyler.
Oh, my God. Steven Tyler again. Yeah. Steven Tyler is at the point where he looks like everybody's crazy grandmother.
There's a whole Instagram feed of Steven Tyler as a cool grandma.
Yeah.
it's really great. But so that's our death pool. You're taking Mick Jagger. I'm taking Diamond Dave.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to win this one cuz I'm seriously literally Mick Jagger may be dead by the time we finish recording.
Oh no.
It's true. I mean, come on, he had his first hit record like 1961 or something. Come on.
Oh, man. Yeah, like he's like contemporary with the Beatles. Okay, wait a minute.
Yes, he's the Beatles contemporary.
Diamond Dave's only 67, but he's a rough 67.
And Mick Jagger is how old?
Mick Jagger.
Yeah, let's look it up real quick. He's at late 70s, if not 80s.
Mick Jagger, he was born in 1943. He's 79.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no. You're taking, I'll take the 79-year-old in the Death Olympics over the 60-something-year-old, even if he's liver off.
The Death Olympics.
Yeah. Come on.
Look, if all of our heroes are going to die before our eyes, we might as well get a little bit of morbid entertainment out of it. And we are, by the way, I am not endorsing or wishing death on any of these fine heroes of music, of rock and roll. And I just, you know, why not? So, yeah, we love these people. We want good things to happen to them and for them to live for many more years.
We leave it to the Bombardiers to remember and remind us when it happens. I pick Mick Jagger and you pick Diamond Dave.
Diamond Dave, yeah. Just do a Google image search.
If you guys want to do side bets on this, it's 2-1 in my favor, just so you know. Yeah. So the bookie has already said it's 2-1 if you want to bet.
Legally, a death pool is illegal. So there's no money involved. Just the honor and glory of being right, and the sadness of losing an icon. Right. So basically, like that.
We do need to talk real quick too about this. I mentioned it last week on the podcast that I had gotten an email by a guy who was going to have his head painted.
Yes, glad we talked about this because I got a message immediately from my friend and Bombardier, dedicated Bombardier, John Gress, out of the Chicago area. Follow him on Instagram; he's fantastic at John Gress Media. He messaged me and he said, after listening to the show, he said, I got the same inquiry as Boure about the losing the bet and painting the head.
Yeah. So he sent me what he got. It was identical. So it is a scam. It is a scam. And he has positioned that what the deal would be is that they book it, they pay for it with a credit card, and then they ask for a refund, and the refund doesn't go back to the same card. Or something along those lines. He thinks that that's what the end game would be. I haven't heard from them in like a week since but the thing was so amazing to me was that they negotiated with me we've all gotten these scam emails, right?
Right.
You can
right.
tell with the whole, we've got a family reunion coming up. That's the famous one. It's a family reunion we want you to shoot.
And it always ends with, do you accept credit cards?
Yeah, right. No, this one, no. Never talked about payment, nothing. And I mean, went so far as to talk about, you know, should they use, matte paint or glossy paint. I mean, he really was talking about the whole thing that made me think it was real.
And usually the broken English that's a dead giveaway, this was actually really like, you know, it's not, it wasn't super obvious from the language.
No,
you
know, not at all.
In the inquiry, not
at
or
all.
Whatever.
Not at all.
So if you also got the I lost a bet and my buddies want to paint my head and I need it photographed inquiry, it is a scam. But if you also got it, post in the Bombardier's Lounge on Facebook and let us know. I'd be interested to see how many people got this in our community, because that's just kind of funny that John got it and you got it and I didn't get it. How did I not get it?
I don't know. I also found this was interesting, by the way, along the same lines. I had never heard of this being done, and I was watching a documentary last night, The Most Hated Man on the Internet. It's about the guy who started the revenge porn site, and they were talking about people who had their emails hacked, and that was how they got pictures and how they were doing it. And this, I was like, I caught it, and then they were like, oh, other people didn't. They said that they would contact someone, they would go in, get someone's profile on Facebook, and then they would text you like on Facebook and as your friend, right? They'd copy this their profile, then they would text you, and then they say, hey, you know, I would text you, hey, Gary, my email's been hacked. I need to go in and change my password, but I've lost my phone. So they're going to send a code to me, and I can't have it sent to me because I've lost my phone. Can I have them send it to your phone? And then you give me the code, and you go, okay. And immediately I stopped it, and I was like, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense, because you can't change what phone you're sending it to unless you can log into your email in the first place. So that doesn't make sense. So then I hit play, and they said, but what they would really do is they would go into your email, Gary, and try to change your password, and you would get a code to change your password, and then you would give it to me, thinking that it's for my phone. And then I would use that code to actually go in and change your password on your email and take control of your email. Right. So if anyone ever says, hey, I'm going to have this code sent to your phone. No, they can't have the code sent to because they've been locked out of their email. They can't. You can only send it to the phone that was to your phone. You can't change that without being able to get into your email. If you can get into your email, you're not locked out.
You know, it's one of these things where people are so inventive and clever and work so hard at this. What would become of their life if they took that level of ingenuity and work ethic and just put that into getting an actual job and learning an actual skill, you know, like something legal and decent?
Well, there's just some people who are that way, though. I mean, come on. Do you watch Better Call Saul?
No, I don't.
Oh, my God. Better Call Saul.
I haven't
so
yet.
Fantastic.
It's done now, right? It's in the last season.
It's in its last season now. I just watched season 5. On Netflix, and season 6 season 6 is wrapping now. Yeah, but it's just like Better Call Saul. Bob Odenkirk's character, that guy spends so much time hustling. When you're like, if you just did regular lawyer stuff, you'd be fine. You'd be rich. You'd be
you're literally got a law degree, the ability to make tons of money.
But
and
it's just a person's nature.
Yeah, I suppose so. So speaking of nature, I have to tell you, Laddie Buck, that the old boy.
Would you stop for a second and consider Laddie Buck?
Laddie Buck.
The hell was Laddie Buck?
I don't know, man. I just probably heard it somewhere.
What nationality were we attempting to culture grab when we came out with Laddie Buck?
It's got to be Scottish, right?
Is that
at
Scottish?
Least I hope it is.
Okay, we were going for Scottish. Laddie Buck.
Anyway, Laddie Buck.
All right.
So we had some friends over yesterday, and by the way, I'm going to make a proclamation. A man in his 40s, a person in their 40s, who has a regular job that starts on Monday, should not make Sunday the day of the weekend where they're going to go drinking.
No. What age would you say? 40? What's the age where getting hammered on Sunday suddenly is not such a thing that you do?
It's right now. It's
40? Right, so 40?
Some
of my bigger drinking days are Sundays because you drink all day. Like, it's a pool party, or for me, it's just
I'm not talking about day walking, my friend. Many of us walk in the day. You know, there's day walking going on. I'm talking about, like, friends over for dinner Sunday night, crack a bottle of wine, and then, you know, kill a six-pack on your own. Like, that's just not a thing that you should do when you have to get up and go to work in the morning and when you have 4 small children that need care. So those are bad decisions because I'll tell you what, it's not even a hangover anymore. It's literally like your body just doesn't work right. Like, I've got acid reflux.
Right. Well, see, yeah, but you do all kinds of healthy stuff. See, that's your problem. If you were just like me and just completely ingesting nothing but horrible stuff and alcohol all the time, it would just be normal to you.
See, yeah, though that's what Julie said this morning, because, you know, she can actually drink again now that the baby's outside of her. And she was like, do you think this is just how we felt all the time in our 20s? And now that we basically like eat healthy and don't drink hardly at all, do you think that like we felt like this all the time, but we were just used to it?
Mm-hmm.
And I go, that seems reasonable.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yeah, when I was in college, 5 hours of sleep and hungover, and you just push through it all.
Yeah, days. I had days in my 20s where I went to work in my work uniform. Like, I get off work, never change out of my work clothes, go get hammered, and come back and stay out so late that I come back to work wearing the same outfit and never having changed. You just that's like. Bad. Yeah, my buddy bad. Dave and I used to work at Circuit City repairing computers, and we had this woman we worked with, let's call her Paula, and she, every dumb retail job has a Paula, and it's someone who takes it so seriously. They're stupid, what should be a slacker job, takes it so seriously and kisses up to the bosses and like pretends like they're a manager, but they have like no people skills, so they'll never get promoted. So we'll call her Paula. So Dave and I show up to Circuit City, and we had been drunk together the entire night. We killed like a bottle of Tito's and like 24 cases of beer and stayed up the whole night, probably smoked two packs of cigarettes apiece. And we roll into Circuit City like 5 minutes before opening time. And Paula comes over. She's like, you two smell like liquor. I was like, yeah, we do smell like Paula. Liquor. Yeah. There's a pretty solid reason for that, Paula, because there's a lot of liquor inside me trying to get out. Like, that's what's happening. It's like coming out of every part of my body. Yeah. Now, Julie and I had this talk this morning. It's like, here's what's going to happen, because I eat pretty clean. I eat like 75% plant-based diet, and I drink like one beer a week these days. And try to get solid sleep, try to get exercise, I'm trying to be healthy as I can because I like feeling good, whatever. And I also like feeling like I'm better than other people. So like I do all these things. And I decided that like, if this is the life I want to live, I have to set limits. I'm never going to not drink, but like I have to decide that like, I have to put a number on it. Like when I drink with friends, it's going to be like two drinks, because that's how much I can drink and feel normal the next day. That's got to be it.
Because
okay. You know what? Whatever the safe drinking number is, it's not 12.
It's not, yeah. No, there's no 12 for me anymore. Yesterday, I hadn't drank all week. And then yesterday, we were like, my buddies were off. We're going to play video games all day. We're going to drink and kill. Yay, okay. And I looked, and I was like, I feel pretty good. Having a good time. And I looked, and I drank 3 beers in 5 hours.
Yeah, that was my might big, as well been drinking big, water. Yeah, at that
my
point.
Big day of drinking was 3 beers in 5 hours.
Yeah, yeah, your body was literally like, that's all you got. Like,
yeah, yeah, it's just a tiny little bit of a tingle. That's all I need. Thank you very much. I just want to be a little bit better, but not so much off the deep end.
Yeah, I just want to not be sad anymore. Can 1.5 beers make me not sad?
That's all. Can I just calm the anxiety? I just enough medicine to calm the anxiety, but not so much to put me into a coma.
Thanks to Grandpa's old cough medicine. Much
all right, we got to talk about this other thing that has been exploding this week. I know you've seen all over Facebook, and this is the AI generated artwork.
Yes, this is the big thing that we promised we were going to talk about it last week, and so I don't think strictly speaking it's photography news, so we'll just cover it before.
No, we'll
go
cover it now. It's more like artwork kind of news. So if you haven't seen this, there's a couple of sites. I signed up for one. I'm on the waiting list, so I can check it out. Where you can go in and actually just give them descriptions. You can just say duck purple on the ocean with a toothpick and blah, blah, blah. And then the AI will create artwork based on your description. And then you can refine it. You can change the things you say. You can do all kinds of stuff like that. And the work that we're seeing, the stuff that I'm seeing anyway, you know, I mean, this is a whole other discussion to have, but it's merit quality artwork.
There's some pretty amazing
stuff that if you saw it in a competition as a judge, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that's 90.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It is.
And it's completely created by the AI. So there's two camps. There's the people who are saying this is really cool. And then there's the people, and a lot of them are competitors, who are just scared to death of it.
Yes.
and saying, yes, this is just horrible because you're not actually doing the artwork. And then that brings up the problem of how much artwork do you have to do in order to actually be doing the artwork?
Yeah, I think that, like, you hit the nail on the head. There are two ends of the spectrum here that I'm seeing the reaction online. There are three general positions. One is, I have no idea what this is. I'm going to ignore it. And then there's the opposite ends of the spectrum are the people who are like, this is cool. This is cutting edge. I'm going to be all over it. If you follow, like, Scott Detweiler, terrific photographer, he's been even creating, like, tutorials on how to, like, get set up doing it, been creating some really interesting artwork, even combining them with his own photography to you know, show how it could be used in work. And although some people have talked about this in terms of image competition and how it's going to affect that, but, like, there's people who are just on the forefront of it, exploring what the possibilities are, excited about where this is leading. And then there's the other end that's like, this is the end of everything creative ever. This is the end of photography. This is the end of graphic design and illustrators. This is the end of everything. And I'm interested what you think, because I think there's potential there. Every generation, multiple technologies will come out that will completely disrupt and upend any given industry. The automobile was invented, and so everybody who was running a horse and buggy repair shop went out of business. Like, unless you're in Amish country, you know.
Well, here's the thing, though. There's so many different angles to. I mean, because this is one of those things where you can look at it from one angle and absolutely be A, and then when you look at it from the other angle, you absolutely B, and those two can conflict with each other. So. Okay, so which angle to talk about first? So first, let's talk about, on a broad sense, let me talk about this. This is making a certain level of artwork available to the masses, which I think eventually will just lead to a lessening of appreciation for this level of artwork.
Right.
In the same way that when I see an abstract painting that's all abstract colors, I just go, could have been made by a 4-year-old. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, it's just paint thrown onto a canvas. And so I really don't have an appreciation for that. Now, there will always be some people who do. But this sort of thing, the world of the people who are just hyper, they just love the Richard Sturtevants and stuff like that, this is going to affect that world.
Yeah, the composite world. Yeah. Imagine.
And way that they were people who were master retouch artists in the era of film and completely destroyed by Photoshop and digital. And no one cares about them anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that no one's going to care about Richard anymore. I'm just saying that it's going to be democratization of...
Right.
Now anyone can create art by just saying some words, and now you can say, this is my art. Look, this is my art, right?
Who was it, Prometheus that stole fire from the gods? Like, remember?
I think so.
Yeah,
so that... So from the art perspective, it makes... When everyone can make an art easily, how long does it continue to be an art?
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's a lot to unpack. And certainly I think that certain levels of certain industries will be very adversely affected. But, you know, for example, if you've ever used, you know, Adobe Spark or Canva or anything to, like, design your graphics and flyers, what you've basically done is that's taken away the work from professional graphic designers. But it's also elevated the average person's ability to create collateral for their business in a world where we are now so entrenched in social media, where you constantly need collateral, but who can afford to keep a graphic designer on staff? So, like, you know, it definitely affects it, but there are still graphic designers out there working. It's just changed the industry. You know?
I just think it's like when someone puts a picture up and you go, wow, that's the ghost zombies doing the thing. Wow, that's incredible. When you don't see those very often because the art takes incredible skill to produce, then it is incredible. When everyone's got 1,000 of them in their phone that they got from the AI thing, who cares?
Right.
You know, who cares? Absolutely. So that's going to be a problem. And then the nitty gritty stuff I like to talk about is that people are like, no, you have to do your own artwork. And I want to go, great. Have you ever used Content Aware Fill when you were doing your artwork? I'm just curious. Because Content Aware Fill is nothing but AI.
I use AI facial retouching every day.
Yeah. I can point to a bunch of stuff in your artwork that is not you with a pencil changing that image. It's some sort of AI routine in the software that is doing it for you. This is just taking it to an extreme.
And follow that back to an even bigger conclusion is that, did you design Photoshop yourself?
Right.
This, you know, this thing that you use to alter your images, are you the creative force behind that? Like, the technology, the truth is about technology.
Did you by chance buy brushes from someone else?
Are you using any templates or actions that you
purchased? Yes, that you got from someone else?
Obviously, I think that's it is different. So it is a little bit apples and oranges. But here's the thing. My conclusion is this. I don't think it's as alarming as the alarmists. I do think it's more serious than people realize as to how not this particular version of the technology, but future iterations of it are going to affect creative fields, and not just digital imagery, music. If you tell an AI to write a pop song, an AI will, if not already, will be able to do that. Write my term paper, you know, create a song for me, you know, design a wedding dress. There's like, AI is here and it's not going away, and the robot overlords are coming for your creative jobs. However, no useful technology has ever been invented and not used. And so you're not going to, your anger, your fear, your frustration is not going to put the genie back in the bottle. You know, it's, you either have to concentrate on areas that will be least effective as a photographer. For example, as of right now, the difference is creating images that people are attached to. We call that family portrait photography and wedding photography. And so, like, an AI can't generate your wedding photos for you or your family portraits for you, at least yet, you know, and there are no memories or emotions tied to those things. It's just really cool graphics right now. But if you're talking about other areas of the business, composite, designing posters, creating just artwork with models, like, AI can generate a very real looking model. An AI can generate a background and an outfit. And so if your gig is fashion photography, used to sell stuff commercially, yes, it is. You have the potential of your career being in danger in the next 5 to 7 years because AI will generate the model, the clothing, the background, and make it any size or resolution for any publication or digital use. And so, yeah, but
okay,
AI...
Okay, let me get into this. Let's talk competition.
Okay, image competition, like PPA style, right. WPPI, et cetera. Yeah.
How do you think it affects that? Because with the artist competition, you can use other people's work, but you have to do, you know, you show the guide images and then you do the work yourself. Right. But in open, as long as you use your work.
Okay, so what you're saying
someone
is
someone else can do it.
In the photographic open competition, you're allowed to do digital compositing. And this is PPA. The rules at WPPI are quite different. But if you're at PPA, at their International Photographic Competition.
Which, by the way, like 2 days from now, early bird registration ends.
Yeah, the deadline. I still haven't I just got to go in and push a button. I haven't done it yet. In the photographic open, you can do composites, but every element in that composite has to be something that you made, a photo that you took. Right. In the artist competition, nothing. You don't have to have created any of the elements. You just have to have put them together. And you also have to show guide images that show the elements you used to put the image together. And so, for example, you might think that that's something that you shouldn't be allowed to do. But what about, for example, photo restoration? You didn't take the photo. You just made it, took a torn up piece of paper from World War II and you turned it into a nice photo. Right. So there's a place for everything, and whatever you feel about the rules, you know, that's irrelevant in this particular conversation. We're talking about the rules as they exist. According to the rules as they exist, in the artist category, you would technically be allowed to use an AI-generated element in your composite.
Right.
But because the rules also show that you have to show guide images, that then you wouldn't be able to do that authentically because you just had the thing generated.
You could use AI generated images and then create something yourself. But it's open, I think, where it's the most because in open you would be able to take your images, feed them into the AI generator, and how would it be different than the rule which says that you can have someone else do your post-processing under your direct supervision?
It's not any different. So the rules will have to change if they don't want that to happen. And then when you change those rules, here's the interesting part is they're going to have to start requiring, like WPPI does, to upload a raw file, and they're going to have to all be checked. They're going to have to all be checked. Well, like anytime there's a dispute in an image, they're gonna have to go and check that raw file. So again, you know, I think Rich and the team at PPA are definitely aware that this is happening, and they'll have to figure out a way to combat it, you know. But as crazy as it all gets, ultimately you judge the image that's in front of you, and things do come and go as a trend. So, you know, yeah, you'll just, like you said, people get used to it. If you start to see these sort of fantastical, otherworldly, crazy things, that will become the new standard. And so at first, you know, this new style might be overwhelming and score really well and win all the awards. But after a couple of years, people will get used to it and tired of it, and it will stop doing as well. So there are always trends in that. What I'm interested in more than people taking advantage of a hole in the rules for a temporary amount of time is how this is going to affect the authenticity of the competition. You know what I mean? And how it's going to be received. Is it going to be, they're either going to have to make a rule against it, or they're going to have to make a place for it, a category for it. And right. In that case, and I think either of those, I think in the short term, they should ban it until they have a better way to deal with it, like temporarily, like a rule in all image competitions. They should be like, AI generated elements are not allowed. And they should also realize that those rules are temporary, because if this is a new way that people create art, they have to decide whether or not it's going to be part of their competition. And I think it would be smart to make a place for it where you can use a certain percentage of the elements can be generated by AI, like no more than 50% or something like that. I'm not sure they'll deal with it, but like, you can't like ignore this.
No.
It's here. The robot overlords have not only proven that they're more logical and efficient than us, but they're better artists than we are.
Yes, they are. They're absolutely.
They can create better art more quickly than any human, you know. But anyway, so it's fascinating. And do you come down on the side of like, just let it happen? Like, where do you come down on it?
No, I mean, I'm laughing because I was on a team that was asked to examine something very similar to this about 10 years ago. And the discussion was, should people have to do their own Photoshop post-processing work on the images that they put into Photographic Open? And I was like the only person on the team who said yes. And other people were like, no, because, you know, we used to be able to, you send it to the guy at the dark room and you said, I want you to do this and do this, and they would do it. So it's no different now. And I said, yes, it is different now, because now you can just give it to a Photoshop expert and say, make it look better. Well, that's my direction. And if they do, now it merits, and congratulations, I'm a master photographer. When the picture I took would never have gotten me a merit in any way, shape, or form. You can make a merit in post-processing. Everyone knows you can.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there are people who, for money, will get you a merit. And I said, and the thing I said at the time when I lost, because you know, I lost the vote and they went the other way, and I was like, okay, I go, but I just want you guys to know that about 10 years from now, this is going to come up again, and they're going to be revisiting it. And the group that revisited them will be saying, why didn't they fix this 10 years ago? I'm like, the time to ban steroids in baseball is before it's a problem. That's when you need to fix it. Now they're going to have to fix it in a hurry, you know, instead of being able to take their time with it. If we start to see this in competition.
Let them have steroids in sports. I'm all for it. Just let everybody do
it. As long as everybody can do it. That's right.
You're going to have to make the field bigger in baseball. Right. Everything's going to be a home run.
The same situation here. You're either going to have to just let it in, or you're going to have to ban it. And like you said, you really can't ban it, because eventually using AI-generated images is going to become just as normal as using content-aware fill.
Yep, I agree. Yeah. Yep. So,
all right, it's about that time. Time for photography news.
Photography news.
If you're like most photographers, you didn't go into business for the paperwork. Does the chaos of invoices, emails, and to-dos make you crazy? Well, that's where 17 Hats comes in. Their all-in-one mobile-friendly platform organizes your business. 17 Hats handles the time-sucking tasks like payment reminders, capturing leads, scheduling your images. With 17 Hats, important emails go out automatically, and quotes, contracts, and invoices, click, click, paid. Small wonder that thousands of photographers swear by 17 Hats. You'll free up so much time from day-to-day stealing to-dos, it's like you've cloned yourself. You'll be able to focus on what you do best, photography. Meanwhile, 17 Hats does exactly what you need done to manage your business, just as if you were doing it. So why not clone yourself with 17 Hats? Visit 17hats.com to learn more. And be sure and use the code PHOTOBOMB to get 50% off your first year. All right, photography news. Right off the bat, we've got to start with this story, which is kind of along the same lines, which I enjoyed quite a bit. And there's a problem with a Spanish advertisement. The Spanish authorities are in a little bit of hot water because they created an advertisement for coming and enjoying yourself at the beach. And it's an illustration, but it's clear that the women in the illustration were created using photographs.
Okay.
So the advertisement was called Beachbody. It's called a Beachbody campaign. And so now the women whose photographs were used to create the illustration, some of them models, they're clapping back. They're like, hey, why didn't you bring us in and let us do this live? Why didn't we shoot this? Why am I not getting any money? Why am I not getting recognition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And the Spanish government is saying, okay, and here's another thing that I see a lot of now that bothers me is that now if you shift any blame nowadays, they yell at you for shifting blame.
Okay.
And I'm like, sometimes it really isn't that person's fault.
Right.
The Spanish government is like, we contracted with a person to provide us an illustration, and this is what they gave us. We never asked for any photographs whatsoever. And in fact, I think they said they explicitly said, we don't want photographs. And people were like, oh, shut up, Spain. I'm like, okay, whoa, you're just trying to blame the illustrator. Yeah, because the illustrator is the one who gave, we asked for an illustration and we thought this was an illustration. When you look at it, it is an illustration, but a photographer like us can look at it and go, yeah, these were pictures and then they were cartooned up. You know, you can tell, right?
This is one of those scenarios where I say to people when I'm training them in photography and how to run their business, I'm like, no, it's not your fault, but it has become your problem.
Right. It's their problem, but really it isn't their fault. And the guy who did it is saying, I think the only solution is for me to split the money with all the people whose pictures I use to create the illustration. Okay, that's nice too, but I love the question of, do you have to do that? And should you have to do that? When does an image, we talked about this before, when does an image become an illustration? When have you changed it enough that now it is derivative and therefore you don't owe no money to the original artist?
Yeah, who's that? The woman, who's that jackass remember the one that's always that stealing images and turning them into giant?
Oh, I forget the guy's name.
Prince, yeah. Something Prince. Yeah, that.
Oh, no. That guy. And then we also had a story not too long ago about the woman who took a picture of Prince.
Oh, right.
And then Andy Warhol's company took it and turned it into the classic four pictures with lots of colors like Marilyn Monroe. And she's like, that's clearly my picture.
Right.
Right. And then also there was the guy who, the statue that he did of the Statue of Liberty outside of New York and Las Vegas, they used that for the actual stamp, and he sued the post office and he won. So I'm like, at what point, because like when you look at this, it's clear this is a cartoony kind of illustration, but it's also clear if I knew one of these, here's my question. This might be the way I would judge it. If I took one of these pictures and I showed it to someone who knew one of these women, but had never seen the original picture, would they still pinpoint that it was that woman? In other words, like these models said, their friends sent them to them and said, look, were their friends able to send it and say, this is you, because they had seen the original picture? So they had seen this model laying on the sand in this pose and they realized that that's what it was? Or was it like, oh, that's obviously Rebecca?
Well, yeah, I'm just getting caught up on this story. And I think there's a couple of elements that we're glossing over here. I think like, and I'll circle back to what you just said, but like, it's a campaign by Spain, and it's a body positive campaign. So it's basically, it's five women on the beach. One of them has hairy armpits. One of them has had a mastectomy and is topless. And the other three are, you know, heavy, full figured women. And the one model that they interviewed, because this made it all the way to BBC News. This isn't like just Petapixel. I found the story on BBC. They took this photo off of this plus size model's Instagram, and then they altered it. But it's clearly her. And then
clearly,
I'm looking at the side by side right now.
And I didn't see. That's what I want to see. Where's the side by side?
Here, I'll message.
Well, here's the thing. But here's the thing. clearly the same photo, or looking at the face, you can tell it's her face.
No, it's clearly
that's
same
the difference I'm looking for.
Photo. It is obviously clearly the exact same photo.
Okay. But my question is, again, do you see the difference? If I saw it, let me see. If I saw that, would I know? Oh, hell yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
If I knew this woman, but had never seen this photo, but I knew this woman, if I saw this illustration, I would absolutely know that it was her.
Yes.
Her name was Naomi.
It was not like
I would say,
altered.
That's Naomi.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, and that's for me, that's my line. If I can look at the illustration and say, that's Naomi, even though I've never seen this picture of Naomi before, I recognize that's Naomi. At that point is when I think you say, no, that's not derivative enough.
I think that part of it is the nature of it being this body positive campaign. I think that adds like an element to the story because it's so unusual. But like straight up ripping photos off of people's Instagrams and using them in a national ad campaign, right, without asking, there, to me, honestly, whether it's Spain or whether it's the company they hired, there is no excuse for this. And it's not like they used her as a template and made a drawing of her. Like, it's the photo of her, and I'm sure it's the same for the other four models. You know, so like, yeah, this is legit just straight up ripping people's images off. And it looks like they're all going to get paid, and that's fine. Good. They're going to get compensated. But what's really screwed up about this is they didn't have a choice whether or not to participate in this campaign.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, but then if there's an artist sitting on the street and he's painting a water fountain and you're sitting in front of the water fountain and he puts you in the painting, you don't have a choice in that either.
Well, if he doesn't show my face, or if he resells the art and it clearly depicts my visage, then yeah, maybe. But, you know,
I don't think you have any right.
Well, if I'm in a public place, I have no expectation of privacy, then no, I don't have any right. But these are like on their Instagram profiles. And you know what? Some of these are sensitive pictures. You have a woman in middle age, gray hair, smiling, and she's like topless and having had a mastectomy. And you know, like, I would feel like you'd want power over that decision. And I think that the fact that they're going to get paid is great. But this is just lazy and sloppy design to just take these, especially when all you had to do was tell the robot overlords, please show me 5 full-figured women on a beach.
And so we come back. But it's a delicate, because I agree, I would want control over it as well. But it is a fact that if you take an existing image and you alter it enough, it is now seen as a new original work, and the original owner of that image does not have right to it.
In this case, I'd be shocked if this was past that threshold. It does. I mean, if I knew any of these women, there's one woman with purple hair that she's in profile, and I think realistically, notwithstanding the copyright that the photographer who originally took the picture has, but the model's image, I think it has to show, at least in the United States, 50%, more than 50% of your face has to be visible in order for it to be considered your actual likeness.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, at least that's something.
Yeah. But anyway, so it looks like that these women are going to get paid for their image. I think that's cool, but I really think that the robot overlords need to disappear and replace the artist who lazily put this together without making, you know, somebody was clearly rushed for time and didn't want to bother with going through the process of, you know, asking these women for their permission to use their images and compensating them in the first place. This is reactive and it's good, but it's still jacked up. I'm not a fan of this. But
all right, let's just real quick, if there's anything we ever do this quick, let's jump over, because kind of in the same vein, we have to talk about the Time magazine cover.
Okay, so this story we posted in the Bombardier's Lounge, and this is about the Time magazine cover designed by a particular artist. I'm just actually looking for that story now. If you've got it pulled up, you go ahead and take it. But from what I understand, this cover is being like pretty crapped on pretty well by a lot of photographers and designers for being quote unquote bad Photoshop.
It's a picture of Brittany Griner. I don't know if that's how you pronounce her last name. I've only read her name. I haven't heard it. So I'm going with Griner. It's Griner or Grinner. And she's the woman, the WNBA player, who is being held in Russia. And so the cover of the magazine, it's kind of a collage style cover. I mean, it's clearly not just a photo. It uses a photo, but the photo has been kind of cut up and there's some collage work done to it. So it's a photo and artwork kind of situation combined that way. And then someone posted it somewhere and said, wow, this is some high school Photoshop work on this cover. And the blowback was, this is their style. If you look at their other work, they do collage type work. This is their style.
Almost in that kind of South Park, everything's meant to look like paper cut out. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so, and how dare you blast this person's style? And I agree with that. But then I got to thinking about it. And if you look at specifically what they pointed out like a couple of spots, like two spots in the hair, for example, where you can see the color of the background that was present, I guess, when the shot was originally done.
Mm-hmm.
You can see like this purple. Then that begs the question of, is it your style to cut a person out and paste them in and not to do anything to clean up anything? Is that an important part of your style? Because if it is, then my bad. But if it isn't, then you should have cleaned up the hair here. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, cutting out and putting in, that's fine, that's your style. But here's what, it's impossible for the viewer to ascertain in this sort of artwork or any artwork really what is purposeful and what is just, oh, you missed that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the thing is, I think that it certainly could have been done. The problem here isn't that I think that they didn't do a tidy enough work. I think that it's sort of like in some ways too tidy. Like it takes you a minute to have to look at it to realize that maybe it's made to look cut out on purpose. I think it needs to be a little more obvious. Like I've looked at this artist's other work and it's very obvious on first glance that that's what they're doing. And I don't know that this is, you know, exactly that. I think that.
But see, now again, you're going into that area where I can, everything you say, my reply can simply be, but that's their style.
Hmm.
Because that's their style covers everything when it comes to art. Because suddenly there are no rules, right? That's their style. No, that's their style. So if you make a mistake, that's my style. It's my style to leave a footprint, a thumbprint in my pottery.
Yeah.
You know, everything is your style.
However, it could legitimately be that artist's style to put a thumbprint on all their pottery. Like, you know.
But in this case, I would be like, okay, but if I look at your other work and I don't see that sort of purple fringing going on, well, then I begin to think it's a mistake. But then you can just easily say, no, I just decided on this one to leave it. Because that's the thing. You can make no wrong decisions in art when you are dealing with abstract sort of impressionistic art. It's impossible to make a mistake. This is why so many people love it. This is why the, you know, NFL football quarterbacks like to go down and paint in their basement to make themselves feel better. It's because they can't make a mistake no matter what they do. That's my art,
right? Yeah.
You know, and so it makes the whole discussion, it just calls into question the whole validity of the art world.
Yeah. I, again, it doesn't bother me one way or the other. I was like, you know, I just sort of like give the artist the benefit of the doubt and not be nasty about it. But we're talking about the internet here. And so people are just going to jump on stuff and be jerks about it. And that's fine. You know, I'd love to, the thing that people don't mind, though, in these cases, a little, if it were a mistake, and let's just say that these were mistakes and not on purpose. I like to think that they're on purpose, just, you know, whatever style, you don't like it, it's not for you. People love a mea culpa. You know, they'll be like, yeah, actually, yeah, that one slipped by me. I was under a deadline and whatever, you know, but just so happened to be the cover of Time. But hey, I'm on the cover of Time. So deuces, you know.
Right, but I absolutely. But then the whole mea culpa is what, you're right. You know, when I decided to cut her head and her arms off and then superimpose it with an old picture of a meteor shower, I absolutely should have cleaned up the purple fringe in her hair. Why? I mean, you're already off in the world of creating something completely unique and different. So why does anything matter?
Yeah, anymore? It doesn't. Yeah, but I mean, I can imagine, what if this is something that was like, sent the file over for the layout, for the design team to do the layout, and maybe sent like an older version of it that wasn't finished or something, or like a proofing version of it, and now you're sort of like got to double down on it. Like, no, totally on purpose. Totally on purpose. Yeah, but, you know, again.
That's the thing. You can always say it's totally on purpose, and there's nothing I can say to refute that. There was a story I saw years ago about a couple in New York City, and they had a small apartment that was absolutely rammed full of art. I mean, you couldn't, I mean, you never saw so much art in your life. Huge art aficionados and collectors, and had been for like 50 years. Galleries, they knew all the artists and everything. They weren't rich, and they were always big on finding new artists, you know, and buying stuff when it was $100, and they kept it all. And they're showing, and now they were finally going to donate it all to a museum. So they're looking around the apartment, and the guy goes, "What is this?" And down low on the wall, there were two nails in the wall and a piece of wire twisted between them. And he said, "Oh, well, Richard blah, 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 some artist guy who is now, I guess, semi-famous or famous. We had a party here one night, and he was here. And while he was here, he did that. He put those nails there, and he twisted that wire." And they were, and the guy goes, "So that's a Richard Abbott original." They're like, "Yeah, that's a Richard Abbott original right there, that artwork." And I'm like, "No, it's not. It's two pieces of nail in the wall with a wire twisted on it." At what point do we stop being so pretentious?
There's a difference between intrinsic value, physical value, and assigned value based on whatever. There are plenty of things that people give value to for no other reason than it has somebody's name attached to it.
Yes,
that's called a luxury brand.
That's an original.
A luxury brand isn't necessarily a better product. It's a product that has something tied to it that gives it prestige. So, for example, you know, if you buy a Jaguar, do you think a Jaguar is the best, most reliable car on the road? The best way you could spend $200,000 on a car? Do you think a Jaguar? No, it's 100% not. It's going to be a nightmare for you, but you get to drive around in a Jaguar. It's a luxury.
But at least you know there was an honest, real, huge amount of effort that went into producing the Jaguar.
Was there, though?
Yes. It's not easy to build
more,
a car.
More than two nails and a wire tied between them.
Certainly. And certainly more than what went into that cover of Time magazine.
Well, the good news is we now know for certain that in the future, all the best art in the world is going to have zero effort to tell AI to make it for you. And there you go. All right. So we got some Canon news. Directly Canon news, and then some news on Canon's profit margins this quarter. So essentially, the first thing I want to talk about is that the newest RF mount Canon is apparently out in the wild. Now, this is according to Canon rumors. That's a direct quote. It's in the field. That basically means it's in the hands of creators, vloggers, YouTubers, and probably their Explorers of Light team and ambassadors. So this is going to be an APS-C size camera with an RF mount. So this will be the third one after the R7 and the R10. So this really does look like a vlogging camera. It's probably not going to have an electronic viewfinder. It's going to be screen only. It's going to be pocket sized as much as possible. And this is going to be specifically targeted at vloggers and creators to have something portable and powerful in their pocket with access to the RF lens mount. Now, whatever you think of that, I think that in order to make a profit, I think you got to target creators, especially people who are like getting into it part-time. This is the vast majority of people who are buying cameras now. And I'm kind of excited to see it. The other thing is that this potentially means the end of the M mount lenses, which is like kind of a bummer because I think those are great little cameras. They never really supported them with just incredible lenses for that mount. They're all just kind of like mostly kit lenses or a couple of cool ones like a 22, you know, a 2.0 that was neat, but you're just shooting with slow 4.5 to 6.3 whatever lenses, just like a kit lens that you would get on a larger camera. And so, you know, that's a really my only complaint with the M lineup. The cameras are just really, really cool and small. I use them as a travel camera, but this could potentially be a replacement for that, but they won't be able to get them as small if it's an RF mount, just because you can't change the size of the mount. You can change the size of the camera. APS-C cameras can get pretty small, but you can't make that mount any smaller. So I'm interested to see where it goes, and I'm sure we'll start to see some kind of an announcement and videos start to come up here in the next month or two as this camera gets into the hands of creators and they have plenty of time to edit those videos. Also with Canon, they reported their profits from the first half of the year, as all publicly held companies are wont to do. And it is interesting now that they're saying they've sold a lot of cameras, they're up from the previous year, that they are predicting that the contraction of camera sales, I think if you look across at any data to show you that the amount of interchangeable lens cameras sold worldwide has just plummeted in the last decade. It's really shrunk. But Canon believes that it is done shrinking and is ready for some growth, and they're willing to bet on that. So if you go over to, and I saw this on F-Stoppers on Petapixel, it's really interesting to think that maybe that it's settled, because, you know, people like to say when things are in recession, when things are getting smaller, that this is the end, everything's terrible, photography's going away, the profession's going to die. People have been saying that forever. But it has been a shrinking in size of the camera market because people are using phones and many other reasons. But this is actually pretty cool. I think that if it's done shrinking and we've settled into a new normal with it, along with the innovation, everything that we've been seeing from all the different camera manufacturers, they start to turn a profit again, you know, in a very real way by selling these cameras. The innovation that we've already seen, I can't wait to see what's next. Maybe they'll put that AI in the cameras so you don't have to put the shutter. You just tell the camera to make you a picture of a beach with five body positive women on it, and the camera will just generate a photo for you. That'd be nice. But however, in opposite news, you were just telling me that you're reading that Panasonic is effectively shutting down the Lumix brand.
Yeah, the Lumix brand is definitely going away. And I think we talked about this when the first kind of rumors and stuff started breaking about this a while back. But it's for sure now. They are shutting down Lumix. Lumix is going away. And they are going to be leveraging their partnership with Leica to produce a new camera or cameras with the Leica brand.
Hail Leica.
So, yeah, hail Leica. So what is that going to mean? I mean, we're talking about the Lumix, which is one of the low-cost, you know, small sensor brands now partnered with Leica. What are we going to see from that? I mean, I'm not as upset about Lumix going away as I'm excited to see what we're going to see from pairing Panasonic and Leica.
Yeah,
you're pairing Kia.
Well, aren't they all part of the L Mount Alliance anyway? Like they already use the same mount on a lot of their cameras.
I think so. Yeah, so I think so.
They've already got a working relationship. I think that, you know, maybe people will be able to get the red dot on their camera for a lot less money, or maybe Panasonic is just going to start making higher end cameras, or maybe one is going to do the lenses and the other one's going to do the bodies. I have no idea, but it's a shame because the Lumix series, I wonder, like, because you have a huge following for the GH5, GH6 series Lumix cameras, and the full frame Panasonic cameras are a huge hit among serious video people because they've somehow made these great cameras that have avoided most of the hate and controversy of other hybrid cameras because they make really solid full frame cameras that people, especially video people, seem to really like. And so I wonder what that means for those particular two lines of their cameras, the GH series and then the SL series, you know? Because they make solid stuff. They're just a small part of the market.
I'm shocked, amazed, happy. I'm really going to be curious if suddenly they start charging hard into the consumer market with an affordable camera that has the Leica name on it.
Yeah, I think that that's a huge mistake. Unless Leica's got money troubles, I think that's a mistake because Leica is a luxury brand. They're not the best cameras in the world, but they have this historic name that people love and they have a lot of cachet. And Panasonic makes VCRs and DVD players and calculators and watches, you know, I don't think it's a good move for the brand. It's definitely, this is like when you have a buddy who's got a girlfriend who's way hotter than he is. Like that's what's happening here. Like Panasonic is your homely friend and Leica is his smoking hot girlfriend. And you're like, what is going on here? Like he's getting a lot more cachet out of the deal than she is. And so, you know, I don't know, because everybody's just going to think it's just about money. Because guess what? It's not a charity. It is absolutely about money for someone.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always about money.
Let's see how it goes.
I want to talk about this French physicist who got in trouble. Everybody gets in trouble, and it's just ridiculous.
The French, they are so cheeky.
He posted a picture on Instagram, and he said that it was the latest image captured by the $10 billion James Webb Space Telescope.
I love this so much.
A picture of Proxima Centauri, the nearest star to the sun, located 4.2 light years away from us. It was taken by the James Webb Space Telescope. This level of detail, a new world is unveiled every day.
Unveiled.
And then, unveiled? Did I say unveiled? Is it unveiled?
Hey, that's a pretty awesome slip, though. Unveiled.
Yeah, unveiled. And it went viral. It was retweeted thousands of times. And then he finally had to come up and could be like, I just love his Well, when it's cocktail hour, cognitive bias seems to find plenty to enjoy. Beware of it. According to contemporary cosmology, no object related to Spanish caricatura exists anywhere else other than Earth. In fact, what he had done was taken a picture of a slice of Spanish sausage and put it on his Instagram feed and claimed that it was a picture from the telescope. He said, in view of some comments, I feel compelled to clarify that this tweet showed an alleged snapshot of Proxima Centauri. It was a form of amusement. Let us learn to be wary of arguments from authority as much as of the spontaneous eloquence of certain images. So here he is like trying to backpedal and be blah, blah, blah. And me, I'm like, just own it.
Just say ha.
It's a great joke. It was a great joke that people thought that this piece of sausage was a picture of a planet. I love it.
He ruined a good joke by trying to turn it into a lesson. What a dorky academic college professor dumbass thing to do.
Yes.
You had a great joke going, man.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, then when they go, I was just testing you. No, you weren't. You had some drinks. And you thought it would be funny, and you posted it, and it is. It was
and you
a great
were right.
joke. Yes.
It's like somebody explains a joke to you after they tell it. Like,
I've come to present my apologies to those whom my hoax, which had nothing original about it, may have shocked. I simply wanted to urge caution with images that seem eloquent on their own. A scientist's joke. Okay, listen. If someone was shocked by this, you don't care about them. Let them be shocked. They're not your customer. As I like to say, there, you know what I mean? Stop apologizing for everything, every single person who wants you to apologize to them. I'm so sick of everybody apologizing all the time.
What's happened here is that a guy who is clearly not a comedian accidentally stumbled upon the best joke of his life.
Yes, probably the best joke he's ever going to tell. What a great joke.
And then he ruined it, like, because he's not a comic. A good comic would have just let that lie, you know?
Yes, or would have done a follow-up of another planet that was clearly a piece of cauliflower. And then people would have been like, wait a minute. And they would have gone back and they would have been like, oh, he's messing with us. He is effing with us. And then, oh my God, that was, oh, bravo. You know, bravo. That would have been lovely.
I put it to you. I would have taken a small piece of cheese and posted again that the moon, one of the planets around Proxima Centauri, is crashing into it. James Webb Telescope is recording this amazing event. Just
here we see the ring. It would have been like just,
it's
the
like,
ring around. It would have been like a Ritz cracker.
No, the ring would have been like the sweat from his beer glass.
Yes, yeah, just something like that. Just go with it. You know, Robin Williams famously said that he would not apologize for any joke he ever told. And I am a firm believer in that. Don't apologize.
Especially not if it's a really good joke.
Yes, the better the joke, the more you don't have to apologize.
I tell you what, apologize if it's not funny. That's what you apologize for being not funny. Like, I'm sorry I wasn't
funny. Sorry that I wasn't funny.
Yeah.
All right, we got to wrap this thing up. The Photobomb podcast is, of course, written and produced by Bure Perry and Gary Hughes. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Bombardiers Lounge.
Bombardiers.
Our website is photobombpodcast.com. Gary's website is hughesfioretti.com.
So it is.
And my website is bureperry.com. You can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you back here next week.
See you later.